Welcome to Ballistic Radio, Cincinnati's only gun talk show. Join us. We're going to explore the topic of firearms and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Now here's your host, John Johnston, on 55KRZ, the talk station.
Good evening and welcome to the Super Bowl edition of Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Check them out online at kylesgunshop.com. I'm your host, John Johnston, and apparently I'm feeling a little goofy tonight. remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Coasting with me this evening, the ever-evervescent. Did you see what I did there? Ever-evervescent. That's difficult to do. That's world-class radio skills right there. Andy Ulrich. Andy, how's it going?
Pretty good, John.
Good. We've got Mr. Producer Eric in the booth. See, Keith is listening right now on his way home, and he's just like shaking his head and like pounding on his steering wheel. I'm going to get yelled at.
And our backup's in the green room.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've got...
The Duke's in there.
Yeah, the Duke. We're apparently influencing the radio stations, ladies and gentlemen, because they've put a life-size cardboard cutout of Mr. John Wayne holding a Winchester repeating rifle in the green room. Made me happy. It was a nice thing to see tonight. Anyway, we've got a great show planned. We're going to be talking with Master Sergeant and Silver Star recipient Robert Blanton. Robert was awarded the Silver Star for extraordinary heroism during a 2008 firefight in Iraq. In addition to discussing the actions and tactics from that day, we're going to be talking with Robert about the effects of PTSD, how he's trying to combat them with his new nonprofit Warfighter Made. Before we get to that, though, we've got a couple things to discuss. So, as some of you may know, because I kind of hint at it, I'm on Facebook quite a bit and have interesting conversations with people on there. I try and get people talking about things they don't necessarily think about. And this week especially, I've noticed, you know, because we've had threads about Glock versus SIG versus 1911 and also the... rapidly invasive projectile, RIP, garbage ammo that, hey, an independent testing doesn't do any of the things they said it was going to do. it did do kind of almost some of the things they said it was going to do.
But it didn't do it in the order which they would like you to think that it
did. No, it didn't. Yeah. It's interesting, though, the emotional attachment that people have towards gear. And whether that's guns or ammo or whatever. Now, I mean, the easy answer to this is run whatever you got. Run it as well as you can. If you can hit what you're aiming at, that's probably fine. I think people try and chase hardware solutions to software problems. And what I mean by that is, you know, at a certain level, you can improve your skill by buying a new piece of hardware if you're the kind of shooter that will benefit from the gains that said hardware provides. Now, there are not nearly as many shooters out there that applies to. I don't consider myself one of them. And
I'm not either. No.
You know, no. I'm a relatively accomplished shooter, I'd like to think, at least in my own little world that I've created around myself. And even so, I mean, and don't get me wrong, I like new guns and I like stuff, but really just pick something, stick with it, practice with it, you'll probably be fine. You know, gear is not the answer. Training is the answer. You know, how much training? Well, no one ever really knows because you don't know what situation you're going to find yourself in that you may need a firearm. And you could even make the argument that you don't need any at all, though I don't agree with that. I do understand why some people make it. You know, but here's a really good example of this. I just recently shot about 30,000 rounds through a SIG P226. I'm really good with a SIG at this point. I'm really good with one.
Right.
You know, I just recently picked up a Glock for the first time in 6 or 7 months and was just playing around with it. And I can't shoot it to the level that I can shoot the SIG, but I did notice that my reloads are significantly faster, 0.2 to 0.5 seconds faster, in fact, on average. Now, what does that mean for me? Well, Nothing really, other than I can reload the Glock faster than the SIG. And why is that? Well, you know, even though recently I've been shooting a lot of SIGs, I've got a lot more time through Glock. But it brings to light an interesting point. As I'm making my decisions to choose what I'm going to carry on a day-to-day basis, and obviously I'm in a little bit different of a situation because I'm going to be starting another long-term endurance project soon, and that's the only pistol I'm going to be shooting and carrying. But let's say I was not that dude and I was doing something else, just a normal, you know, hey, I'm going to carry a gun, which one am I going to carry? Then I get the fun task of looking at the performance that I'm trying to get out of the handgun and deciding what's important to me. Well, I shoot the SIG more accurately and I shoot it faster, but I can't reload it as easily. You know, the SIG's a little bit heavier than the Glock, whatever. And then I get to decide what's important, and that's what really everyone needs to do. You need to understand what your mission is, and by mission, you know, carrying the gun comfortably and hitting what you're aiming at if you need to shoot it is the mission, at least in my mind. And people are more than welcome to disagree with me. But if that's what we're going for, when you're examining a firearm, you know, my opinion about it and Andy's opinion about it and any random dude on the interwebs' opinion about it doesn't matter at all. Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of the day, we're all just sitting in our mom's basement, you know, saying stuff relatively anonymously that doesn't apply to you. So I guess what I'm trying to say is make your own decisions based off of your own testing. And don't let people sell you on things that work for them if they don't work for you. And just the other thing to keep in mind, the flip side of that coin, is do not assume that just because something works really well for you, that it's going to work really well for everyone else. That's not how the world is. We're all different. Kumbaya, rainbows, unicorns, butterflies, whatever. I don't know. And the reason I bring this up is because I've been getting a lot of flack lately of, you don't know what you're talking about, blah, 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 blah. Well, okay. I guess I don't. No, you know, whatever. But I think people get hung up on what I'm trying to say and what I'm trying to do, and they think I'm telling them they're doing it wrong if they're not doing it the way I'm doing it. Not what I'm saying at all. Have you ever known me to act that way at all, Andy? Not so much.
No, not so much.
Every once in a while. I mean, no, not really. I was going to try and come up with an example.
We all get our trolls, though. I mean, that's. I think that's a separate issue, though.
But Tom Kelly, Darkstar Gear. It's funny when you're friends with your biggest troll, though, and he actually, you know, makes holsters for the
tongue-in-cheek troll, and then there's true trolls. Yes. So.
Well, anyway, that's all I wanted to get to before we get Robert on. When we come back, we're going to be talking with him about the 2008 firefight, and also his nonprofit, and other things that are a little more important than my fights on the internet. So, hey, I won. No. Anyway, right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Visit them online, kylesgunshop.com. Anyway, so joining us on this Super Bowl Sunday is going to be Master Sergeant Robert Blanton. We've got him on the line right now, and since I talked for the entire first segment, I'm going to make it so you guys don't have to hear very much more of me. Here we go. Robert, are you on the phone?
What's going on, John? How you doing?
Very good. Doing well, actually. I'm in a relatively good mood. I think it was because I actually got to sit in the studio before the show started and kind of relax and spread out. But
it's happy.
Yeah, that's it. I really appreciate you taking time out of your Sunday, and especially Super Bowl Sunday, to talk to us. Certainly appreciate your time.
And, well, like I told everybody on Ballistic Radio Facebook page, the Raiders aren't in it, so you know I got a little time to spare right now.
Yeah, I know.
We're the same.
Yeah, if the Bengals were playing right now, we would have had to have rescheduled, no offense, but I don't see that happening anytime ever. I still love them, though.
I feel you there.
Anyway, now I'm going to get a bunch of angry callers from the Cincinnati area wanting to talk about that, and then all the people listening in Phoenix are going to be like, who cares about the Bengals? Anyway, back to the point of the show. So for those that don't know, can you give us a bit of your background, and we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, My name is Mass Sergeant Rob Blanton. I've been in the Marine Corps for 21 years. Originally joined as an infantry Marine, deployed with 3rd Battalion, 1st Marines to Somalia. And as soon as I got back in 94, I took the 1st Force Reconnaissance NDOC and took it twice. Didn't pass it the first time, went back a few months later and passed it the second time. And operated at 1st Force for 10 years. And I've been a recon Marine for about 9 years. And that's where I'm at right now. My wife's a retired Marine, and I'm looking forward to retirement here coming up in March.
Jeez. Well, hey, congratulations on making it to retirement. I know personally my military stint, there wasn't any way I was going to make it that far. I'm like, no, I can't deal with this. Anyway, so I guess you, as you said, you're a recon Marine. You were awarded the Silver Star for an action that took place in 2008 in Iraq. Do you mind talking a little bit about that?
Sure.
You can just start at the beginning or wherever you'd like to start, and I'll ask poignant questions as they occur to me.
Yeah, from the very beginning, after I left First Force, my family and I deployed to or got stationed in Okinawa at 3rd Special Operations Training Group, where I was a instructor for close quarters battle. And I decided that I knew 3rd Recon Battalion, which is also on Okinawa. They were looking for platoon sergeants. They had just come back from a deployment in Iraq, and a lot of their senior Marines were moving on, and they were looking for platoon sergeants. So I volunteered to leave SOTG early and become a platoon sergeant at 3rd Recon. And when the word got out, a lot of the Marines that I had trained as part of SOTG started coming up to me and asking if, you know, if I did come up, if they could be a part of my platoon. So I was very honored to be put in that position. And one of the very first individuals that came and talked to me was a Marine, Sergeant Michael Fursky. And we'll talk about Michael here in a little while longer. So I ended up moving on to 3rd Recon. We had a great pre-deployment workup, really got to instill a lot of the things that were instilled in me at 1st Force. And I had a lot of great Marines that assisted me in that. And we deployed to Iraq in April of 2008. And the mission of recon at that time had kind of gotten convoluted. We were doing a lot of counter-insurgency operations instead of doing traditional reconnaissance.
Right.
But with that, we were also doing a lot of... you know, we were looking to see if insurgents or the locals were training to do things against coalition forces. So we were in this area called Lake Tharthar, which is one of the largest water sources in Iraq. And we were just looking to see if there was any evidence of individuals conducting training. Homemade explosives, HME, was a big deal at that time, and we were just looking for remnants of that.
Okay.
On August 10th, in August, you know, it gets extremely hot in Iraq. It was probably 118 degrees that day, and we decided that we were going to hold up during the heat of the afternoon, and myself and Michael Fursky were sitting together kind of talking. Exactly a month to that day, prior to that, Mike had just married his local Japanese, then wife, Hota Fursky, because he found out that she was pregnant, a little pre-deployment surprise there. And so the platoon and the company, Alpha Company, that I was a part of at 3rd Recon Battalion and the battalion itself really jumped through a lot of hoops to ensure that Michael was able to get married to Hota by a thing called marriage by proxy to allow her to receive the benefits that she was entitled to being married to a U.S. service member.
Right.
So that it started to get towards the evening time, cooled off. We all mounted up into our vehicles and took off. And our platoon commander, Captain Luke Lazo, came over the radio and said, "Hey, we're going to go ahead and set up a harbor site for the night." And Michael Fursky came over the radio and said, "Hey, we got another set of buildings coming up. Let's go ahead and search those." And he said that he was going to take his element to those buildings. He directed my element, which he was an Alpha, I was in Bravo element, directed my element to push forward past them to another set of buildings in the distance, and which we started to do. And I had a turret gunner in the vehicle that I was riding in, and we're going along, and he sounds off. He's like, "Hey, I think I hear gunfire." And I look up at him, and I was getting ready to ask him to repeat himself, and my radio starts to go crazy. And it's my platoon radio chief, who we affectionately called Big Head Fred Rogers, says, "Hey, we've just been ambushed. We need your assistance." Right. And so without hesitation, before I can even tell my element to turn around, everyone had already spun around, and we drove approximately the 300 to 400 meters back, everyone kind of stopped to assess what was going on, and from that moment on, we were being attacked from a building, and we were in it to win it, so to say.
Yeah. Now, as far as, I guess for people that don't know, are you able to talk about the vehicles that you had with you, or would we be better served skipping over that?
Sure. I mean, we were just in the up-armored Humvees. When we first deployed to Iraq in 2003, we were all driving in the regular thin-skinned fiberglass Humvees. And after 2004, a directive came out that you can no longer cruise around Iraq like that because of the IED threat. So the first set of armored Humvees that we were getting were just the regular Humvees that we were driving around in, with another, extraordinary amount of weight added in armor.
Right.
And those things could barely get out of their own way. And then they came out with a turbocharged version of the up-armored Humvees, which became significantly better. And then I myself happened to be in the MTVR 7-ton, the Oshkosh vehicle, which, by the way, I love that vehicle. Absolutely saved my life and my driver's life, Albert Gonzalez. And it was, and then we had a couple of the MRAPs, the mine resistant vehicles.
I just wanted to get the point across that you guys didn't have any armor with you as far as tanks.
No tanks.
Yeah.
No amphibious tractors, nothing like that.
Right.
But, all of our vehicles were armed with 50 cals or 240 Gulfs.
Right,
right.
So you've got that one element that's been ambushed. You guys have gone back. We've got about 2 minutes left, and we're talking with Master Sergeant Robert Blanton about 2008 firefight in Iraq. So the first element's been ambushed. You've got your element swung around, and you're converging and kind of reassessing what's going on. What happened next?
It starts to become apparent that Mike Fursky is missing. And it's because everyone's talking on the radio, trying to, call out the threats that they see. We're trying to identify where Mike Fursky's at. And I was understanding at that time that Mike had been recovered and was by a vehicle. So at that point, I went ahead and told the guys, "Hey, by all means, go ahead and start ripping into this building to stop what's happening." And a couple guys started to comply, and then I got the call, or the announcement was made, "Cease fire, Mike's still in the building." Oh. And, you want to talk about a tough call to understand.
Right.
So at that point, I dismounted, got out of my vehicle with all my other Marines, and we just started to selectively engage individuals that that were coming out or were showing themselves.
Right.
But the problem was that they were within a building. It was hard to identify. And then you start running into things, where's Mike inside this building? Who else is inside this building?
Right.
Are there non-combatants? Is there a family in there? Mm. So it just starts to become real difficult to analyze and make sound judgment calls.
Right. And the easy call being, if you're not concerned about all those other things and you're not thinking about all those other things, you just flatten the building and drive on. But that's not an option when you're in that kind of situation. If it's all right, Robert, I'm going to put you on hold just because we got to go to break. But when we get back, we'll talk a little bit more what happened and also some other things. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. Brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. Visit them online, kylesgunshop.com. We're talking with Master Sergeant Robert Blanton about the 2008 firefight in Iraq. Robert, are you still there?
Still here.
Excellent. So where we're at right now, you've got some individuals in a building that have ambushed you and your co-elements, and we've got at least one member of your team in the building, unaccounted for. So, pretty much.
That's correct.
All right. What happened next?
At that point, I had decided to dismount my vehicle, and we were engaging individuals as they exposed themselves. And I'm looking around and watching my guys just perform as they've been trained to do, But I'm looking at the situation and just understanding that, again, I have no idea what the situation is inside of that building. I don't know the numbers that are in there. I don't know where Mike's at. I don't know if there's any other families in there. So I decide that I get back in my vehicle. Again, at that time was a MTVR 7-ton. And I look at my driver, Corporal Albert Gonzalez, who we lovingly referred to as Gonzo, and I said, "Brother, go ahead and we're going to take this vehicle and we're going to put it through that wall right there." And before I even had a chance to finish the sentence, he had gone ahead and dropped the vehicle into low and locked all the hubs and the axles and everything, and he was starting to pull forward. And we had a mine roller attachment on the front of the vehicle, which we didn't have the rollers themselves. It was just the attachment, which looked like two huge forks that would be on a forklift.
Basically a frame to hold it.
That's correct. And we started to press that into the front of the building. And, of course, these are all like mud adobe type structures that have thatch roofs that are reinforced with whatever wood or pieces of metal that they find in that area. And we hit that wall, and it makes the roof collapse in, and we had kind of created a breach point in the front, and we started to back the vehicle out. And as we're backing the vehicle out, we get rocked by something. And the front windshield has, all I see is smoke, and the front windshield now has a substance on it that's kind of blackish, and then I start realizing that it's got some red elements in it. And at that time, I really didn't have an understanding of what had happened, and to realize, I was pretty much unconscious or dazed and confused. And what had happened was, as we were backing that vehicle out, a individual wearing a suicide vest from one of the other attachments come running out and jumped on our vehicle and was trying to make entry into the cab and was unsuccessful because two of my other Marines, James Bunny and James Haley identified him and started to lay into him with small arms fire. And he realized that he wasn't going to make entry into the building, so he jumped on our hood and detonated himself. That detonation took out the supply tank for air on the vehicle, causing the brakes to lock and effectively stop this in place.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So again, I went ahead and dismounted and was assessing the situation, and I hear Gonzo from inside the vehicle, "Hey, somebody's trying to surrender." And it kind of drives my attention to this area, and there's an individual within the rubble, hands up, and trying to surrender. So I went ahead and came over the radio. We have a non-combatant. No one engaged him, and obviously no one did. I ended up stripping him down naked because of the IED threat that we were experiencing, or the suicide threat that we were experiencing.
Right.
Brought him to us. During the engagement, we were still being actively engaged with small arms and hand grenades, and brought my my interpreter, known as Ted, who was a Iraqi local who decided to join our side because his childhood friend that he grew up with was killed by the insurgency, and you know, he wanted to help us out on that. Or to help us make a difference in his country.
Right.
And turned him over to Ted, our interpreter, and to the human exploitation guy that we had with us, and continued on with the fight.
Okay. So at that point, you've made entry into the building. I assume the the primary goal at this point is to find out, I guess, the situation inside. I mean,
yeah, we started to form a team, or to organize a team to make entry into the building, to, you know, honestly, to locate Mike or to kill anybody who wants to continue to fight.
Right.
And as we were starting to make entry, we got attacked by another individual who was throwing grenades from the rubble, and a dear friend of mine, George Callum, actually was impacted by one of these grenades that knocked him to his feet, and he jumped back up and rejoined the team uninjured, other than the concussion blew him off his feet.
Huh.
So we made entry into the building looking for again, we kind of it wasn't really in the building, it was around the building, because the building itself had collapsed and it was just a pile of rubble.
Right.
And we were looking for Mike. And there were still individuals that we were engaging that were kind of exposing themselves from where their hiding spots within the rubble. And came across an individual, or I'm sorry, as always, I was clearing some dead space. I kind of realized that you know, the spidey senses are going off, and what I always train my guys is, you know, if it doesn't feel right, it doesn't look right, it's not right, you know, don't dismiss it, don't, you know, second guess yourself, treat it for what it is.
Right.
And I called for support, and I hear a familiar voice sound off with you, and it was the voice of my driver, Gonzo, who wasn't a recon marine, he was a motor T driver, but he had completely and totally immersed himself in our training and our ways, and I was totally comfortable with it and confident with it, and we popped this corner and we had two individuals staring back at us, and one of the individuals kind of looked at me and slowly started to bring his hands up, and I realized he had a hand grenade in his hand. And I called it out and went to engage him with my M4, and as soon as I squeezed the trigger, nothing happened, and immediately transitioned to my M9 and eliminated him. And then his buddy sitting next to him had his AK, and he got a little bit too. So that was pretty much the end of the engagement portion of it, and we located Mike. And as we were digging Mike out, my platoon commander immediately just jumped into the foray and started digging Mike out without any regards to his life. And as we were pulling Mike out, an individual again from within the rubble threw out a hand grenade, and George Callum, who had already experienced the effects of one grenade, called it out, grabbed Luke Lazo, threw him to the ground, jumped on top of him. The grenade detonated. Fortunately, no one was injured from it, and they immediately jumped back in and were able to pull Mike out. Called in an airstrike, eliminated the situation, and got everybody medevaced out of there.
Okay. We got about 30 seconds left before we have to go to commercial. If you don't mind, when you found Mike, what kind of condition was he in?
We understood that, I understood that Mike was gone, but that's not...
Wasn't the point.
I talked to Mike like he was, it was just like, hey, brother, you're okay, you're fine, and we're getting you out of here.
Right. Okay. When we get back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about what you're doing now, and maybe just a lesson or two the listeners can take out of your experience with what happened there. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. Right now, we are talking with Master Sergeant Robert Blanton about his experience in 2008 in Iraq, for which he was awarded the Silver Star. Just finished up hearing about that. Robert, are you still there?
Absolutely.
Excellent. I guess we'll kind of try and get through this a little bit, just because we're... As always, the show could probably be a little bit longer. We've got so much stuff to cover. But I guess, in hearing about that firefight, and I've read the write-up and all that, there's a couple things that stick out to me. And then I want to talk about your nonprofit and what you're doing these days. Just first of all, the mindset of you had something to do and you were going to get it done. And specifically, a really good example, that driving your truck through the wall, transitioning to a secondary when the primary goes down. Did you even have a hesitation there, or was that just like instantaneous?
It was instantaneous. I would wager a bet that if there was hesitation, Gonzo and I probably wouldn't be here right now.
Right. Right. I guess for the people listening, and then we'll press on. What do you think that someone that hears the story should take away from this?
I would say probably the takeaway is mindset. You have to prepare yourself mentally to continue on or continue through no matter what is presented to you. And you train yourself to do that mentally through repetition. If we were going to apply this to firearms, then it would be, through the repetition of dry practice, presenting your pistol or your rifle or whatever you would like to use over and over again. So when a situation arises and you have to protect yourself or your family, then you don't have to think about it. Your subconscious takes over and does it because you've trained your subconscious to do it.
Right. And that's just an interesting point that I think people miss out on. They think the practice involves going to the range or whatever, and so much of it can be done without spending a dime. I want to move on, and I've been kind of covering this a little bit in the last, month or so, or at least trying to a little bit more. We had Kyle DeFore on talking about transitioning out of military life and PTSD, and I know that it's something that you've had to deal with and find ways to overcome. And first of all, I just wanted to thank you for talking about it. I really think it's important, and you know, for lack of a better term, we've got a lot of really badass guys now that are, you know, talking about this and saying, well, no, this is a thing that we need to discuss and address. I guess, if you don't mind, can you talk about your new nonprofit and what you're doing there?
Absolutely. Those badass guys that you're referring to are actually the Vietnam veterans, because those are the guys that really came back, had nothing afforded to them in the terms of help, and the way they were treated when they came back, they kind of banded together, especially when, you know, 9/11 happened, and said, listen, if however America forges on after this, we will guarantee one thing, that no service member will ever be treated the way we were treated when we returned. And now one of my co-founders, Brian, is, you know, he's missing his right leg, his right hand, and most of the fingers and his thumb on his left hand. Him and myself get the best care that's available right now to us because of those Vietnam veterans who stood up and said, hey, this is not going to happen ever again.
Right.
But what we all did is we got together. PTSD was actually starting to kind of ruin my life. Not only was it ruining my professional career, I was having a hard time at work, just working, dealing with individuals, so on and so forth, but it was starting to ruin my family life too, because I didn't want to go out anymore. I didn't want to do anything.
Right.
Started drinking more than I ever had in the past, and it was just becoming an issue. One of the problems that I was having, they decided, they being the medical side, came out and said, you know, you need to start taking antidepressants, which hesitantly I decided to do after the relationship between my son, who is now in the Navy, was starting to deteriorate, and I knew I had to do something, so I went on medications.
Right.
After going through a couple different types of medications, because, you know, one gives you a side effect of this, so you can take a different type that gives you a whole separate, you know, type of side effects, I ended up getting on this stuff that actually made me suicidal. And, unfortunately, I was feeling like this. Fortunately, I had the wherewithal to one night. I was in a particularly bad spot, and fortunately, my wife came to my rescue and actually really helped me. And one of the ways that she helped me is she got me back in touch with Butch, one of the co-founders of Warfighter Maine, and he got me interested in working on my 69 Camaro. And so what Warfighter Maine does is we're a 501c3, and we do recreational therapy for ill, injured, and combat wounded service members and veterans. And the main way we do that is through the modification, adaptation, and customization of cars, trucks, motorcycles, and off-road vehicles. And kind of what we say is we say it's adapted to the injury, but it's customized to the soul. So there's a lot of people out there that do adaptations for cars. You know, if you have an amputation that requires you to have a handbrake or a hand throttle, whatever, people will do that. What
right.
they don't do is do that customization. We're doing a Can-Am motorcycle right now for Davey Lind, who's a retired recon Marine. He's a double-leg amputee. He had the Can-Am motorcycle. It was great for him, but then he realized that, you know, his feet, his prosthetics would vibrate off the foot pegs, and he'd have $100,000 worth of prosthetics dangling precariously to the ground.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So he thought he wasn't going to be able to ride that. So through contact, he came to us. We designed floorboards for his vehicle, and then he started talking. He's like, you know, I really like the flame jobs that I see on some vehicles, and we're like, hey, that's right up our alley. We got in touch with a lady who did a phenomenal real flame job. You can see if you go to our Facebook page, Warfighter Maine, and check it out, it's on there. Kicker Car Audio donated a stereo system to give some tunes to Davey's vehicle. And it's just been a real positive experience. We now have an individual, Juan Dominguez, who's a triple amputee. He's missing both his legs above the knee, and he's missing his right arm almost to his shoulder. And he saw what some of the things that we've done, and he came to us, and he wants to ride a motorcycle again. And those are the type of things that we do.
Okay. If people want to help out, what do you guys need? How can the people listening right now help you all out?
I appreciate that. What they can do is, or what we're looking for is, obviously we're looking for the donations. The way Warfighter Made works right now is we have no paid officers. No one gets paid in Warfighter Made. So 100% of all donations go to the projects that we do. We're also looking for corporate sponsorship to bring in the funds that we need to bring what we do to a larger level. And then, of course, we're also looking for those contacts in the industries that we're in, cars, trucks, motorcycles, and off-road vehicles, to get that product donation that we need to customize these vehicles or to adapt these vehicles for those guys. And they can find us at www.warfightermade.org. We're also on Facebook under Warfighter Made and Instagram at Warfighter Made.
All right, perfect. I'm actually sharing your guys' page on the radio page as we speak. So for the people listening, if you like us on Facebook, there will be a link to Warfighter Made's Facebook page up in about now. So for those of you who want more information, that'd be one way to do it. Sir, I really appreciate your service and also you coming on the show tonight, taking time out of your Sunday to talk about stuff that isn't easy to talk about and bringing attention to. I really do appreciate it.
John, I appreciate it. You having me on. I appreciate Ballistic Radio giving me this opportunity and Kyle's Gun Shop for making sure that you guys are on the air. That's awesome, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, it's a great shop, too. If you ever make it out this way, you'll have to check it out. But so, hey, I'll let you get back to the football game, and you can actually go and do something fun now instead of having to sit on your cell phone and talk to some dude in Cincinnati. So.
There's a game on right now?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. I don't know if it's a game. It sounded, last I heard, it sounded like a slaughter. So, but
go Raiders.
Yeah, go Bengals. All right, man. I appreciate it very much. I hope you have a good evening.
Thanks. All right. Thank you very much.
So, next week, we got a couple things going on this week. I'm actually expecting to get the new FN test pistols, should hopefully arrive this week. Going to be starting the 50,000 round endurance test on that shortly. Also, the Knights Armament rifle should be inbound to me, hopefully within the next week or two. It's going to be really exciting. We've got the second season of Ballistic Radio starting
coming up
beginning of March, and I've got some really cool things that are going to be going on this year that I can't talk about yet, but. It should be pretty good. So anyway, next week we're going to have Eric Lund, a federal agent and Team FNH USA shooter, talking with us. I had him scheduled actually before I ever decided to shoot the FN pistol, so it's kind of funny. It should be. I got to talk with Eric out at SHOT Show. Though. It should be actually a really cool show. Eric's a cool dude. Talk about shooting stuff he's doing with FN, some other interesting industry things. As far as Ballistic Radio goes, you probably want to go give our Facebook page a like at facebook.com/ballisticradio, just because I'm giving stuff away. So anyway, thanks everybody for listening. I always appreciate you taking time out of your Sunday evening to spend it with us. Make sure you go give us a like, Ballistic Radio, on Facebook. Also, go check out the website, ballisticradio.com, for past shows. Anyway, be safe. Make sure you check us out next Sunday right here at 7 p.m.
Go Bengals.
Yeah.